Blog Talk Radio.
Our community have become toxic waste. Those in high places are planning to remove the toxic waste. And while we flitter and live this frivolous, foolish life, seeking pleasure from our bodies and pleasure from the bodies of others, and seeking to be famous and wealthy in this world, to be used by the power to make our people think that if you go to school and work hard, you too can be successful. That's a lie. I don't give a damn how many of you go to school and work hard. They select a few out of the mass to deceive the rest that this house is not your house. And you are going to have to think about a house of your own, because white America, listen to me good, man, cannot support you any longer. White America cannot give jobs to her millions of unemployed, much less ours. Did you hear me? Elijah Muhammad told us in the 60s we should pool our resources and get farmland, because there is no freedom without land. You remember those teachings? He said that the time of separation had come, and that we are going to have to think about building a nation of our own. You, in the 60s, you were ready to say it's nation time. You don't say that no more, because you have been deceived into thinking that inclusion into this is your salvation. This that you want to be included in has no future. None.
Greetings and assalamu alaikum. Welcome to tonight's edition of the Time to Leave Blog Talk Radio Show. This is a show where we talk about community building, building our own separate societies and communities, and pooling our resources in order to supply our own needs and protect our own families, and to also be in a position to where we can grow to be an example of a community that will inspire our people and give us the confidence that we need to do for ourselves. Today is a day that is known as Thanksgiving, but some people call it Indigenous Peoples Day or Un-Thanksgiving Day. This is a day where the hypocrisy is shown of how people are grateful, however, they are grateful at the expense of a whole other people who lost what used to be theirs, and that's the American Indians. So on today, I don't think of pilgrims, and I don't think about things that we gain in being part of a society that is based on consumption. I think about the indigenous peoples who, out of their kindness, were taken advantage of, and now they are peoples who are striving to get back to their original greatness. Tonight's show, speaking of original greatness, tonight's show, we're going to be discussing economy. How can we discuss advancing and pooling our resources to get economy to where it needs to be? And so we have a wonderful guest host, who is an active sister in the Time to Leave movement, and she has a wonderful guest that she's going to introduce. And our guest for tonight is Sister Niambi Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Niambi.
Walaikum salam, Brother Carlson. How are you?
I'm very well. And yourself?
I'm well. Thank Almighty God Allah. I'm excited about tonight's show.
Yes, ma'am. I am as well. And brother is in the queue. I'm going to open his mic now, and I'll let you go ahead and handle the rest of the show.
Okay, thank you. Assalamu alaikum. Brother Sharif, are you there?
Wa alaikum assalam. Yes, ma'am, I'm here.
Hey, praise be to Allah. I want to start in the name of Allah, the beneficent, the merciful. I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is indeed his servant and messenger. Brother Sharif, we are absolutely excited to have you on today's show. We're grateful that you took the time out today to speak with us briefly about all that Allah has blessed you to do at such a very young age. And before we begin, Brother Sharif, please tell us a little bit about yourself outside of being a young entrepreneur. Who is Brother Sharif?
Yes, ma'am. So essentially, you know, I was born and raised in Southeast D.C., born in 1992, so I'm 27 years old. When I was in D.C. has always, as far as my memory, you know, is has always been a really rough city. Like many of the cities that are predominantly, you know, African American and really close. When I was growing up, there's a lot that I've seen, and it got to a point where the city had got so bad, and I would just say attacks on, just on young people, attacks in my neighborhood specifically. It just got so high that, you know, my parents thought it would be best if me and my brother went to Atlanta, and go to a Muslim private school in Atlanta that he had heard about. And that was the best decision, you know, really for my family, because, you know, if not, then me and my brother would have been, you know, we would have had to go to the, this was at a time where D.C. was labeled, you know, murder capital. There were so many homicides a day in such a small city. But this is a city that is, you know, has this, just about the same population as Atlanta. However, it's four times smaller. And one of the worst schools, which was actually labeled the worst school in D.C., that was the school that it was our neighborhood school, so we were going to attend that school. So our parents decided that it would be best if we left, and I think that was the best decision. You know, I was 13 years old when I moved to Atlanta with my brother, who was 14. We went to Atlanta. We stayed with about five to seven different families while we were there, ultimately until we graduated. While I was – I'm sure if you can imagine that type of experience, you know, it would definitely mature you, you know. So while I was there, I was heavily involved in business, you know. I mean, I was still in school. I always try to find something to do, you know, outside of school and online. And when I was about 17 years old, really when I was 16, I had, you know, made a proposal to my wife and to her family. You know, when I was 16, I made the proposal that I wanted to marry her. She was 15 at that time. And, you know, our family really took it like they knew it wasn't a joke. They knew I was serious. They knew she was serious. However, the school did not, you know, really permit that. So, you know, after my family got involved and her family got involved, the school changed its bylaws, and it allowed for young people to get married at the school if they meet, you know, certain requirements. So, you know, when I was 17 and she had just turned 17, we actually celebrated our anniversary 2 days ago, November 26th. We're now married. Alhamdulillah, we now been married for 10 years. So I'm 27, been married for 10 years, and we have two children, a six-year-old who's getting ready to turn seven. His name is Falah. That means success, as we say in the Adhan, Hayya Alal Falah. And my daughter, she's 2 years old, and her name is Sawa, which comes, it's a root word, Siwa, which comes from the word, where we hear Uswa, Uswa. And Allah says in the Quran to follow the Uswatun Hasana of Muhammad the Prophet. But this is where her name comes from, Suwah, which means it's a balance, you know, an equilibrium to be established. So those are their names, and we have Allah, we have one on the way. So, you know.
Praise
you to
Allah. Congratulations.
Alhamdulillah. So Allah's been definitely blessing us. And now I live in Atlanta. I graduated from Howard in our sophomore year. My wife was in upstate New York, so we were, a lot of young people always ask me about, you know, how is it like when you marry, you know, have to do the long distance relations. Like, I know a lot about it, you know, because my wife had a full ride scholarship to Bard College in upstate New York. I had to go to Howard. Well, I mean, I decided Howard was the closest I could get to her at that particular time, with choosing from different colleges. But I went to Howard, and I went back to D.C. She was in upstate New York, and then I would just take the train to see her, you know, biweekly or every month. And, you know, in our sophomore year, my wife had got pregnant, and I finished my education at Howard. She moved back to D.C. with me. After 2 years, when a baby was had, then we both moved to New York so that she could finish her education. So we spent 2 years there in New York. This is where I picked up other skills, particularly in construction. I was doing roofing, I was doing painting, I was doing floors, and I had started a business there to really maintain my family. And then we moved to Atlanta. And, you know, a lot of you all know me from my work with We Buy Black, as the owner of We Buy Black. So this business was started in New York, and I was using the money that I made to not only take care of my family, but to also fund the idea of We Buy Black in the early stages. So, alhamdulillah, I mean, you know, three, 4 years later, here we are now.
Praise be to Allah. Thank you. Thank you. What an inspirational story. So, since you brought up We Buy Black, tell us, what was the inspiration behind it, behind starting this online marketplace?
You know, Allah says in the Quran to come together on common terms. And just this one ayah is so powerful, as many ayat when they connect. This one here, you know, really helped me to figure out what is it that, you know, I could get involved with. Because when I went to Howard, I studied sociology and community development. And, you know, I was shocked by a lot of the statistics, you know, that we have in our community so far as having the highest poverty rate, homelessness, et cetera, et cetera. And I knew as an entrepreneur, I always wanted to be involved in my own business. I always knew that was something I wanted to carry. However, I also wanted to figure out what work I could do for our greater community. What was it that I can do to help target and alleviate some of these issues that we had? And I wasn't too sure exactly what I wanted to do. And I actually remember when I was 16, I wrote this post on Facebook. And, you know, it reminds you every 10 years. Reminded me of what I wrote 10 years ago. So when I was 26 last year, it popped up and it showed a message that I put when I was 16. It said, I don't know exactly what I want to do in life, but I know I want to be involved in community development to some extent, just not knowing exactly what I want to do. And that's exactly my sentiment even today. It's like, you know, I know that, you know, the ultimate goal is for us to, you know, establish, you know, a model community that can be a mercy and an example for the whole world to implement and to follow. So I knew that if I was going to be involved in that, then I needed the participation of people. And in order to get that participation, I took from this ayah in the Quran where it says, come together on common terms. And this is probably the only reason why I chose the name We Buy Black. It was corny. It was, you know, it was just like, you know, it was too direct, you know. And but, you know, and then a lot of people didn't necessarily identify with that term, you know, within the community. You know, they would say, well, you know, we should stop saying the word black. So Some will say, no, we should use that word black. Some will say, well, no, we're Moors. Or some will say, no, we're Bilalian. Or some will say, oh, no, we're this, we're that. So really choosing the name black or we by black is really based on strategy. I thought long and hard on it. I consulted with others on it. And ultimately, I made that decision to call it We by Black on the basis of coming together on common terms, that this is something that we all want. We all want to get together and make money and help and have and make money as a tool to help alleviate us from the issues that we face, to feed our families, to provide for our community, et cetera. So this was a path that I chosen strategy chose to do so.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Okay. Now, at the age of 27, I think you're one of the youngest entrepreneurs that we've had on the show to date. And 2 years ago in 2017, your second business venture was Coral Oral, the first black-owned toothbrush company. Tell us more about Coral Oral.
Yeah, I noticed that, you know, there was something that was really affecting our community, you know, and that was really we may have been freed physically, you know, we may have been freed physically, you know, even at the Emancipation Proclamation, we celebrate Juneteenth. However, you know, spiritually and mentally, we have not. And you know, it's not, you know, I heard this, but it really came to me when I was talking to people to help get involved with We by Black. And I was saying to them that, you know, we're going up against a big giant and we need to create and provide, you know, for ourselves. We need to create everything for ourselves and be able to provide everything for ourselves. And I really meant that, you know, and still do, you know, that whatever it is that we can think of, whatever it is that we utilize, then we should be creating it. And we should encourage our young people to create that. And at that particular time, I was volunteering at a school. And I was telling the young people, I said the same thing to them. And I said, so name something that you all would like to create. And they just had a couple of seconds to write it down. And they got back with me with things like a clothing line, T-shirt company, you know, a hat company. Some people even said my own cologne, my own oil company. I want to do like a hair care product with the shea butter, et cetera. And I think out of about 20 young men, that was really like everything pretty much fit right in there. It was it fit right into that scope. So I told them, I said, well, do any of you all have an interest of creating a I think I said an airplane? And you know, they laughed. It was like, an airplane? Why would we want to create an airplane? I said, well, why not? Like, you know, everybody's flying on one. That's the wave of the future, to fly on an airplane if you want to get somewhere. You know, and it's, you know, and I just said, well, why not? And I said, what about, you know, being able to create a skyscraper? You know, I said, this is where all the rich people are. They go all the way to the top of the skyscraper. They look over the whole world. And that's where they plan. That's where they meet. So I was just really asking them questions about thinking outside of the box, thinking of different things that they can create. So I tasked them. I said, well, look, I got you. I understand. This is, you know, this is a little too big. So, all right, I'm with you. Let's do this. Let's create something that we use every single day. I said, so name something that we use every single day. And they said, oh, well, you know, I use a hairbrush. Or, oh, I do this, I do that. And, you know, one young brother said, well, you know, we brush our teeth every day. I said, okay, excellent. I said, can we name a black-owned toothbrush company? And they were laughing, like, why would they create a black-owned toothbrush company? Why would we create a toothbrush company? And I asked them, I said, well, why not? I said, you all brush your teeth how many times a day? Once, at least two times a day, right? They said, yeah. I said, okay. We all brush our teeth at least two times a day. I said, and name a oral care toothbrush company that you know of. They said Oral-B, and they said Colgate. And I said, that's the only two that you all could think of? They started thinking. They said, yeah, that's the only two we could think of. I said, so all of these people that you know, millions of people that have to brush their teeth, you only could come up with two companies that are selling toothbrushes? I said, so imagine how many millions of dollars are being circulated into that particular community, whatever it is that they want to fund, whatever community they want to build. When we talk about building Black Wall Street and having all of these type of things, they could build a Black Wall Street on just selling toothbrushes alone. I said, so I tell you what, let's do that. Let's create a toothbrush company. And I pulled out the whiteboard behind me. I pulled out the markers, and I started designing. I asked them how many toothbrushes should be in a pack. They said four. I put four. I said, what color should a toothbrush be? They said white or orange or blue and pink or purple. I said, well, everybody has a toothbrush that color. Let's do a toothbrush that nobody has. They said, a black toothbrush. I said, whoa, like, yeah, you're right. I haven't never seen a black toothbrush in the market. Definitely at that time. I mean, Colgate did release one after we released one, but they didn't have one on the market at that time. But so we put black toothbrush. Boom. I asked them, you know, what patterns should we use? So we chose different patterns instead of colors. And ultimately, we drew it all out. And the next day, I went home. I sketched it up on my computer on Photoshop. I designed it. I sent it over to a buddy of mine who has a business in China. He got back with me and said that they can have it produced within 2 months. So I told him, okay, perfect. Brushes, they got me back the prototype within 45 days. Within 30 days. And then the whole thing was there within about 2 months. I brought a case of the toothbrushes to the school. I opened them up and I showed the students. And they were standing there like, why are you showing us toothbrush? Oh, my goodness. And, their jaws dropped. And they couldn't believe that they saw the toothbrush that they had described in class. And, you know, we already had We Buy Black running and operating. I put the toothbrushes online. And from announcing them, it had reached over 3 million people within 2 days. That's how many people came in contact with our post about having the first black-owned toothbrush. And within the first 7 days, we made back our original investment, our initial investment. We made it back. I think it might have been in the first 3 days. I think it was in the first 3 days. Yeah, the first 3 days, yeah, we made back the original investment. And I was showing the students, I was saying, like, look, like, this is what I mean. And then a lot of them had jobs right after that. They were packing the toothbrushes. They were mailing off the toothbrushes. They were vending at events, et cetera. And we still use those toothbrushes We still use those toothbrushes as a fundraiser, you know, for a lot of different things that we support and promote throughout the city and nationwide. So it was just an example, you know, of just showing the students what can happen in something just as small as a toothbrush we could create. And I charge them with every February we should release a new product.
Wonderful, wonderful. I think, are you there, Brother Sharif?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, yes, sir. And so you've had quite a few firsts. And included in those first, in 2018, you launched Tubman Batteries, the first Black-owned rechargeable battery company.
Yes, ma'am. So that was a very similar, very, very similar, like, process. You know, we were still in our class. We were still having meetings. We were still talking about different endeavors that we should get into. And I told them every February we need to create a product. The next February, after, like, you know, the time they were, like I said, they were working for the company, packing and shipping. But I remember when they were packing and shipping, I told them it was at about 3 or 4 of them in the room at this particular time. And they were, like, debating on sports. Then I heard a conversation come up on, they were debating about girls. So I stepped out of my office and, you know, I said, listen, I don't want y'all to talk. Again, I said, if you all want to speak and talk about something, about how we're going to help further our community, how we're going to help, you know, alleviate the problems in our community. I told them, they was like, so, you know, what you want us to come up with another product? I said, yeah, come up with another product. And they said, all right, cool, we're going to think on it. I said, matter of fact, that's all I want to hear. I'm going to go back to, that's all I want to hear is you all talking about products. So I go back. And I'm listening to them. And they're saying everything and so many different things. hey, you know how, you know, young men are, you know, they criticize each other. Man, nobody want to do that, man. That's stupid, man. You know, they going back and forth. So one of them said, you know, we should create our own battery. And then another one said, why we create a battery? That's stupid. You know, so I said, so I stepped out of my room, my office room, and I said, what? Like, who said that? Who said to create a battery? And they pointed at the young man that said, create a battery. And I said, man, listen, that's an excellent idea to create a battery. I said, I know of a few battery companies, Duracell, Energizer. I said, but, you know, I think that if we created a battery, I think that we could really, you know, we could really turn this into a big business, because it's not just only, you know, AA, AAA batteries. You have, you know, 9-volt, but you even go up to car batteries and airplane batteries, you know. So we started brainstorming. I brought them into my office. We pulled out the whiteboard. I asked them, well, what name should we come up with? You know, and they were trying to think of a name. And I remember one said, you know, bought batteries. And it wasn't a bad, it definitely wasn't a bad name. I thought it was actually an excellent name. And he wanted to call it Bought Batteries. And I said, man, that's an excellent name for a battery company. And I said, but why did you say Bought? He said, because of Usain Bolt, you know, fastest runner, et cetera. And, you know, they was like, you know, he was telling me he's the fastest runner, you know, and, you know, this is what we're talking about, speed, you know, charge up, whatever you're going to charge. And I, you know, my thinking was, I said, that's excellent, right? You on the right lines. But I told him, I said, the only issue here is that, you know, Usain Bolt, you know, he's still continuing with his career. You know, before you say, like, he's the fastest, then someone faster than him. That's how it is. It's just time evolves, you know. And I told them, I said, well, what about, I said, let's think of a pioneering figure in our community who just, you know, exemplified having the most energy, you know, a very big spirit. She was determined, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And as I start going on, you know, they said, Harriet Tubman. I said, that's right, you know, Tubman. So we could call it Tubman Batteries. And they were like, oh, yeah, that's the name, you know, et cetera. And I knew it was a way for us to really, you know, not just sell the product, but when people open it, they could learn more about who Harriet Tubman was. Black, white, brown, Asian, it didn't matter. They could learn about our history. You know, this could actually you know, this could have, you know, caused people to really want to learn more about who Harriet Tubman was, you know, and I'm pretty sure it definitely did. So that's pretty much how Tubman Batteries came about. You know, and really, you know, our work has been that, you know, you probably saw me, you know, on Instagram, you know, really challenging people, like, we need this and we need that. You know, and I would go into different stores like Walmart or Kroger or these large stores and say, is there a black-owned company that's producing this? Is there a black-owned company that's producing that? And we need to be producing it, right? And this is really to get our people to awaken that, you know, we need to take charge of our own life. We need to be in control of our own life. Whatever it is that we need, then we need to be the ones producing it. You know, we have to take that charge. And it's so many products. There's so many services that are out there that it's going to have to be done as a collective movement, you know, that we all have to get behind and rally and charge each other and support each other and fund each other to help make this happen. So that's really been, like, you know, my work for sure.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Okay, and so now this brings me to your latest endeavor, which is to open the first black-owned supermarket chain. Now, are we still in the fundraising or development stages, or have we opened the first store yet? How close are we? How close are we to opening the first grocery store?
Well, so it technically wouldn't be the first supermarket. The way that we have promoted it, it would be the first supermarket chain, period, that is the first supermarket chain that is selling primarily all black-owned products, right? that we have a lot. We have quite a few black-owned grocery stores, and we have had even black-owned grocery chains. I think when we was actually launching this or having an idea to, there was one in Alabama called Calhoun Foods that some of you all may be familiar with. But that was a black-owned grocery store chain. They had multiple stores, I think over 20 stores in the Alabama area. And they were back in the 80s. They were actually competing with Walmart, But that's them. But even the CFO of Calhoun Foods definitely reached out to me after they closed. So that supermarket chain closed down. The founder passed away, and the supermarket chain had closed down. We've definitely been looking at, just because of the work that we do with We Buy Black, we come across all of these excellent black-owned products. So the Soul Food Market will be a place, a physical store that you can go into, starting with the first one here in Atlanta. You can walk into the storefront, and it's a grocery store just like Walmart, on a smaller scale, so more like a Whole Foods 365, where you're able to go inside and you're able to find everything it is that you want. Definitely the basics. So your laundry detergent, your toilet tissue, all of your hygiene products, your bread, your produce, your meats, et cetera. So this is really what we wanted to offer our people. And also to have a component where it's that for people who are not in that area, then they could be able to buy these products online. So Soul Food Market wouldn't just be a grocery store, but it would also be a fulfillment center, you know, really positioning us to compete with, you know, giants like Amazon. So right now we've crowdfunded over $440,000. We just completed the business plan. We now have the drawings for the market. We've located a potential site. We will purchase the land and build from the ground up. And we now have really good relations with a bank here in Atlanta, multiple banks, multiple black-owned banks. We have really good relations with them. And one in particular where the money is sitting at that particular bank, and we also have a meeting with them to discuss potentially leveraging the dollars that we already raised. So we will continue to crowdfund, but we want to definitely get a move on the building. I mean, technology is advancing, our competition is advancing, and we definitely want to go ahead on it and kind of, get going. So a lot of things are in place, a lot of things are starting to shaping up, and we have a lot of support. It's overwhelmingly a lot of support, and it's so much support that I really don't know what to do with it all. I had to reach out to consultants to let them know that this is what I'm dealing with. You know, we have people who are reaching out to us by us announcing that we have a market. We have people reaching out to us saying, hey, you know, I have 300 acres that my grandfather left me and I don't know what to do with it. You know, maybe you all could use this for the market. Hey, you know, I think the highest I've heard was like maybe it was over 300, the highest I've heard, but definitely heard 300 multiple times. You know, people just reached out at 50 acres, 20 acres, you know, and they just said that this is land that is sitting. And we need to, and then we had people reach out to us to say, hey, you know, I work for, in supply chain with Kroger or supply chain with Walmart, or I'm the VP of this, you know, or the president of that. And I noticed that we have a lot of tools, a lot of resourceful people in our community. And I wasn't really expecting all of that, you know, but to see all of that come, I noticed that I have a bigger obligation to utilize those tools to bring us together to figure out a master plan to help us be able to establish, this supermarket chain. The goal is to create a model here in Atlanta, a model that works, a model that is that puts, you know, a lot of these supermarkets to shame and at least compete with them. You know, people will come here. They will flock here to get their products because the price is great, the customer service is excellent, and the prices are low, the products are great, you know. So this is what we want, and then moving forward, you know, the goal is to establish a soul food market in all of our major, you know, predominantly black cities. But it's not to just be for black people, of course. You know, that goes without saying. This is, I don't think we ever been the people that stand at the door and turn people away because of their skin color, right? But you know, but it is for us to know that, you know, we're being placed in a position of leadership, and with that comes a greater responsibility, not just for ourselves, not just for all people, but for really the whole world. That when we use these products, we want to make sure that these products are sustainable, that these products are environmentally friendly. We want to make sure that our meat, if we're selling meat, that we want to make sure our meat is halal. You know, that we go through the proper channels of slaughtering the meat, et cetera. So this is like I'm looking at the best practices to have in whatever it is that we're involved with. You know, we have new technology that we're going to release with Soul Food Market that's going to allow for the businesses to benefit greater than what they would benefit with Kroger or with Walmart, et cetera. You know, we have freer terms that we have. So it's a lot of great things that's rolling out. Some are still in development. But it's definitely looking really good for sure.
Yes, sir. All that sounds great. And we've come to the portion now, Brother Sharif, where we take questions from the callers. Brother Crawford, do we have any callers in the queue?
Yes, ma'am. We have some callers, but me being the promoter, the host of the show, I reserve the right to ask the first question. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Sharif.
Wa alaikum assalam.
I just want to say it's really refreshing to listen to a young brother that knows where he's going and what he has to do. You got a foundation in your family, and you got knowledge, and you know, you got your faith, brother. And it's really refreshing to hear that. And it sounds like you're even duplicating yourself by teaching others, brother. So keep up the good work. My question is, you've talked about the things you've been doing, and you've talked about your background. I know you're not doing it by yourself. So if you can take a little time and tell us about your team that you've gathered together to help you meet some of those goals.
Yeah, for sure. So our team is forever growing. You know, we're always looking for, you know, people who align with our vision, align with the mission and our values to really come along with their talent and to advance, you know, all of the operations that we are putting together. You know, I'm very much aware that I don't know, you know, too much of anything, you know, that, you know, I mean, relatively speaking, I know very little. And I'm humble enough to know that I try to keep people around me that know a lot. And my team is made up of that, you know, that we have, you know, just in general operations, you know, that we have our customer service team, et cetera. But I try to keep a lot of advisors around me, people who not only have been through, you know, where I'm trying to go, but at least can see the potential, can see the vision, and they're not doubtful of the possibility of where I'm trying to go. I like to keep those type of people around me for sure. I like to speak with a lot of different pioneers, and I know a lot of pioneers who really have you know, paved the way, you know, for us to be where we are. A lot of the strategies, a lot of the tactics that we have to implement today, although they were implemented years back in a much different way, they still have to be implemented. And typically, it goes back to you know faith, you know, and courage, and but I like,
yes,
to keep people around me that have expertise. You know, some of them have served, a lot of my business partners and those that I work with serve with larger corporations. They understand systems. They understand how things move and operate. And they understand that they understand the vision where we're trying to go as well. So for all of our teams, you know, we do a lot. So like for every business and every system within the business, you know, I try to have someone managing that, but not just managing, but then also coming up with a plan to further advance it. And I try to hold them responsible. First, I try to understand and see if there's any way I can assist, you know, with the advancement of their particular area. And, you know, but I hold them responsible for their goals. You know, We By Black alone, there may be, you know, upward of about, you know, I want to say 10 people, you know, part of our business team, you know, and that's from customer service to sales to, you know, solutions, marketing, social media, et cetera. The We By Black convention team, which we have our convention every year that sort of highlight, you know, some of the things that we've been able to help produce throughout the year, and just some of the excellent businesses that come, you know, throughout our channel. You know, we have a team for that, so that's probably about, I think that's about 8 people that is involved with that. And then the companies that I mentioned, you know, Core Oil, Tubman Battery, et cetera. You know, we're looking even to build those teams. You know, I think ultimately, you know, in all of these companies, I mean, essentially you have to have a head. And I think that's where I've been pretty much placed. However, that's not my greatest interest. you know, Allah has blessed me to really always think of ideas. And if I share it with you all my idea book, you'd be like, wow, like you've been writing this down for a long time. And I have. Like I have a lot of different ideas. And it's hard to really see those ideas come to fruition if you have to manage, you know, a lot of the companies that you start. And that's one of the greater business lessons that I've learned is that, you know, business is like a child, you know, and when you produce that child, you have to have, if you cannot be the full parent, and most entrepreneurs cannot be the full parent, but if you cannot be the full parent, then you have to find a spouse. You have to find someone to marry and to go into that business with.
Yes, sir.
Who can nurture that business, sustain that business, and see that business grows to its adulthood, and until that business is able to start taking care of you. So that's who I have on my a part of my team. They understand that vision, and
yes,
we all are working to see that
happen.
Thank
you for giving me that detailed answer, and we have some more. Two more people in the queue, first of which is Dr. Ridgely, the founder of the Time to Leave movement itself. Dr. Ridgely?
Yes, assalamu alaikum. Can you hear me?
Assalamu alaikum.
Well, Sheree.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I can hear.
You hear me? All right. There's a lot of things I would like to ask you, but the most important thing I want to ask you is we down here at Muhammad Farms, we have whole wheat flour. We have patient flour, we have cream of whole wheat, we have muffin mix, and we're developing some more products, but those are the ones that are already being marketed across the country. And I want to sell our products in your supermarket chain, my brother.
Yes.
How do I apply in terms of getting the products to you for you to investigate? Etc.
Allahu Akbar. That's very refreshing to hear. I have to tell you that, you know, very refreshing. This is exactly what I'm talking about. You know, we are all, you know, open arms to the different resources and, you know, businesses like yourself, to have you all to help us fulfill this vision of a soulful market. That it's impossible for us to do this without you, for sure. It just cannot happen. So we do have a team that is that we have put together to really build out this list of all the products. Of course, I'm sure you can imagine when people say, I don't know if it's possible, you know, for us to have a store with all the products from it. But it is.
Right.
But it really, we just don't know all of the people in our community and what they're doing. And every day I'm hearing about something new, something amazing, you know, that's happening in our community. Again, this is very, very refreshing to hear. If you can, and I'll get your information too, but if you can email our team at is hello, H-E-L-L-O, at soulfoodmarkets.com. If you can email
Soul
our team.
Soul Food Markets? Is that spell out markets, MK? All of it spell all the way out?
Yes, sir. Yep, markets all the way out. So hello, H-E-L-L-O, at soulfoodmarkets, plural, markets.com. Soulfoodmarkets.com. And
okay.
Yeah, definitely.
And what should I put in the byline?
I will put Muhammad Farms. Muhammad Farms. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Now,
and I have my team to look out for that for sure.
Okay. I listen very carefully and I study very carefully. There are a lot of people who have a lot of talk and a lot of big ideas. But sometimes I can pick out a charlatan, and sometimes I can pick out somebody that's for real. And I may be wrong about you, my brother, but you for real, bro.
Alhamdulillah. Yes, sir.
But it's one question that I want to ask. You said something, and it kind of fascinated me in terms of your upbringing. Okay. It sounds to me like that your parents are Muslims, right?
Yes, sir, they are.
And it sounds to me like when they sent you down to Atlanta, you were sent down to a family of Muslims, not necessarily blood family, but families of Muslims to look after you and your brother. Is this correct?
That's definitely correct. Yes, sir.
Now, see, this is why we have to have our own community.
Yes, sir.
Here it is, that your parents felt safe enough or good enough about some other Muslims down in Atlanta that they would send you and your brother down there knowing that you would be taken care of, and they would move, you know, as times went on, they move you from one family to another, but it was really just moving within a village as such, even though it may not have been in the same exact physical location in Atlanta. But in and around Atlanta, there was a village mentality that moved you around as a child of the village. Is that correct?
That's definitely correct. That's definitely correct. You know, the families there, nobody really wanted to, because I went there when I was 13, and I had to be there all until I was 18, you know, until I graduated. So nobody really had in their mind, you know, that they, you know, would keep us, you know, all the way until, you know, that's 5 years, you know. So a family would keep us for a year, then another family keep us for a year, then another family keep us for a year, all until we, you know, until we graduate. Some families, you know, they had their own situation and things happening in their household, so they had to keep us just for a couple of months, you know. but, you know, so that helped me and my brother mature, you know, very, very quickly, you know, very quickly. You know, we learned the different dynamics of the household. We understood what works and what did not work. We understood rules, chores, you know, obligations. We understood family structure and, you know, all of that. So it definitely matured us at a very young age, you know, coming from a whole nother city, you know, to Atlanta. Yeah.
And also it seems that your wife is like your cover.
You know, she went through a very similar experience, actually. So you're right. You know, she moved to Atlanta when she was 14. A very similar story. Her and her brother moved to Atlanta to board at the Muslim private school. They call it collectively Muhammad Schools of Atlanta, but essentially there's a Clara Muhammad School, and then there was a W.D. Muhammad High School. It was right next to each other, so they would just say Muhammad Schools of Atlanta. But at that school, I met her when I was in the high school, And, you know, coming from D.C., you know, I mean, we were borderline trouble. You know what I mean? Just coming from another city, I'm sure you could imagine. You know, you just send city kids down to the country, and it's, you know, their parents are not around them, so they free, you know, under that definition of freedom. But, you know, we went down there, it was like, okay, you know, this is nice, you know. But when we went there, you're right, we were embraced by a community. That's the difference, you know. It wasn't just it was authentic, you know. It was a community that, you know, other people were sending their children down there as well. I mean, this was, you know, this is how much is needed, you know, nationwide. You know, we have to have communities where we can, you know, if things are troubled in our area, where we can't necessarily, bring up our children the way we want to, we should be able to have communities where we feel safe enough to send them somewhere and be able to get the proper education, et cetera. Now, of course, every school, everybody needs, you know, more work, you know, and that's really the, you know, reason why I'm very dedicated to the work that I do, because I recognize all of the good in a lot of our communities that, you know, inshallah, if Allah blesses us to, you know, reach the point where we can to be able to fund our communities, you know, nationwide, to be able to fund our farms, like your farm that you're speaking of, to make sure that, you know, you will have all of the resources there to be able to, reach our community nationwide, to be able to fund all of the good work in our community, you know, from food all the way to our culture, our education, et cetera. So, you know, that's my obligation. That's my commitment. And my family knows, you know, I'm the type where I cut my hand open and shake it. If you're on the same page I'm on, I cut my hand off and shake it with you and say that, you know, all the way to death, man, you know, we have to establish this, you know, that's my spirit. So, man, I really appreciate you all, you know, definitely. And I'm going to make sure that my team, you know, that's comprised of a lot of different individuals from a lot of different places, from New York. We got people in California that work with us, people in New Jersey, D.C., got people, of course, in Atlanta where I am, you know, just all over and from many different communities, whether that's a Christian community, et cetera, from all over who understand that, you know, that now is the time for us to work together, for us to bring the best and brightest minds, you know, and really put our hands together and say that, you know, we have to make sure that this works, you know. And, so, you know, alhamdulillah, I'm very grateful, you know, for sure.
Okay, we will be in contact with you. One last thing, I don't want to excuse the expression on Turkey Day. I don't want to hog the mic. But the way that you all come up with ideas in terms of that teamwork thing, you mentioned, you keep mentioning classroom or school. Are you a part of a school or something like that?
I'm not. Different schools would – so I would volunteer at the school that I graduated from, W.D. Muhammad High School.
Okay.
But schools in Atlanta where I am, they would ask me to come and speak to, you know, some of the young people. So I always accept the invitation.
Okay.
You know, as long as the schedule worked, but I always accept the invitation, and I will go and speak to different students at different schools.
Okay. Now, another thing about what came to my mind that I found out when I was going to Columbia University, and this is what black folks need to pay attention to, right? You know, I found out that when you are going to school at these white colleges and universities, and they have you to write papers, they are going to steal the best ideas that come across their table. Even though you writing on a subject, I was in economics, and, you know, you writing on a subject, and so, you know, you do it, you try to get your A or B or whatever, you try to get your A. So, boom, then he gives you a score, right? But, he gives you back your paper. But, hell, they copy that paper, and later on you might see that as a part of somebody's dissertation or somebody's publication, and you say, well, damn, I remember something like that. I can't remember an idea similar to that when I was in college. Yeah, that was your idea. They just stole it. So if we could put our minds together, and that's why we got to have our own schools, our own system, and that let us come up with these ideas, and we benefit from those ideas instead of giving them away to somebody else and they taking it and getting rich off of. I just like the way that you all sit down and come up with those great ideas that you did for the toothbrush and for the battery company. So very good, brother. All praise due to Allah. We hope that we could service you in some manner in the future, my son.
Yes, sir. Alhamdulillah. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
Yes, sir. We have down to the last 4 minutes, and we have one caller that was patiently waiting. Caller with the last four digits, 4644. We're down to the last 4 minutes. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Oh, my name is Pianki. What I was going to tell the young man, there is a, and brother, Mr. Wrigley may know, there was some Muslims that had a farm in Georgia that was raising livestock, and they was doing it by way of halal. And I can't think of the name for the best of me. But
are you speaking of New Africa Farm? New Africa Farm?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, actually, one of his the brother who owns that farm, his son is in my in a youth group that I work with. But I'm close to the brother. I know of his farm, and we definitely going to be working with them for sure. Definitely, we haven't got to that point yet, but we've been collecting, the different farms within our within the black community nationwide, and
another thing, what I found, I used to I know Sterling Moody, real great good. He's out of St. Louis. He has some grocery stores there, but down in Mississippi, you got the Mississippi Farmers Association. It's like a co-op, and there's another one down there, I think, in Alabama. But people at Alcorn University, is an agriculture school, they can get you in contact. And what these associations do, for instance, if you're a grocery store and you need a large amount of produce, well, what they do, they go out amongst the black farmers and they find what it is you need rather than you visiting them individually.
Mm.
You understand what I'm saying? And that there's a service for you. They're well-paid, well-funded, well-operated. It's two of them. And you just ask around. If you contact Alcorn University Agriculture Department, talk with anybody there until you find out. They can tell you who these folks are. And if you had a way to contact me, I could, tell you who they are once I get back to, where I have all that stuff written down.
Yes,
well, this is a perfect segue. Thank you very much, Brother Pianki. We're down to the last couple minutes, and this is a good opportunity right now, Brother Sharif. I'm sure there's many people who are listeners out here on our show and those who may listen to the recording that may want to contact you or contact your business to get more information or to find out how they can support. How would they get in contact with you, brother?
Yeah, for sure. If you are interested in contacting our team about Soulful Market, definitely reach out to our main line, of which is hello, H-E-L-L-O, at soulfulmarkets.com. If you're interested in, contacting us about We Buy Black and the operations that We Buy Black and getting involved with We Buy Black, then you can go to info, I-N-F-O, email us at info@webuyblack.com. If you're interested in just reaching me directly, you can email me directly, Sharif, that's S-H-A-R-E-E-F, @webuyblack.com.
Okay, Sister Niambi, we're down to last. I'm going to let you go ahead and have the last words, and you can close out the show.
Yes, sir. Brother Sharif, would you please just tell us about your social media outlets? How can we find your businesses on social media?
Yeah, you could go to Soulful Markets on Instagram. Just search Soulful Markets on Instagram and We Buy Black on Instagram. For the toothbrush, it's Core Oil on Instagram. and Tubman Batteries on Instagram. But primarily we're on Instagram. We're also on Facebook, so you can search those names on Facebook as well and find us.
Okay, thank you. We thank you again, Brother Sharif, for taking the time out of your day to join us.
Won't you have
thank you.
Me?
Yeah.
Won't you have
some like him?
Like my slime, thank you all.
Won't you let me? Won't you have me? Won't you have me?
Tennessee. Lord, I've really been real stressed. Down and out, losing ground. Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone. I never at once felt so alone. I know you're supposed to be my steering wheel, not just my spare tire. But Lord, I ask you to be my force of truth. For some strange reason, it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee. Then out of nowhere, you tell me to break out of the country and into more country. Fast eyes burst into Ripley, where the ghost of childhood haunts me. Walk the road my forefathers walk, climb the trees my forefathers hung from. Ask those trees for all their wisdom. They tell me my ears are so young. Go back to whence you came, my family tree, my family name. For some strange reason, it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee.
Down to Holly Springs. Razadon and Baba, they went down to Peachtree. Headliner, I challenge you to a game of horseshoes. A game of horseshoes!
Now I see the importance of history. While my people be in the mess that they be, many journeys